thank you for the invitation. It's a great honor to be here and give a talk on our serious work on this Fermi surface symmetric mass generation and some application to this newly found superconductor. So first, here is some reference that we have some formal setup for the Fermi surface anomaly and give the models of Fermi surface SMG in various dimension. And recently we apply this general setup to the realistic system to this nuclei superconductor. And with some very unique feature can be seen from the Green's function. This series of works mainly collaborate with my advisor Yizhuang You and Meng Zeng from UC San Diego, and also Zhu Wenwang from Harvard. So the outline would be, I will first introduce this symmetric mass generation, and then talk about the symmetric mass generation, particularly for the symmetry of the Fermi surface, and define this Fermi surface anomaly, and then give some examples of this Fermi surface symmetric mass generation, and then talk about the applications, then conclude with some future directions. So let's begin with this very famous cartoon. It's a talk about this emergence in condensed matter system. In the universe, we have these real particles and maybe this real horse. But in condensed matter, there are many interaction effects to dress these fundamental electrons and give rise to these quasi particles. The quasi particles may not be can be composed of many fundamental electrons. They behave collectively and mimic some fundamental particles. Then the property of the particle, such as the mass, can be emergent in condensed matter system. The real house may compose of the protons, neutrons, and due to the energy mass equivalence, they have the mass. But in condensed matter system, we can have the mass due to this this band gap between the valence band and conduction band. There are certainly other notions of mass, such as inertial mass and gravitational mass, which we will not talk about today. We only talk about the resting mass in condensed matter system. Yeah, and if you have questions, feel free to interrupt. So people are wondering how this mass can be generated, for example, in the universe or in the condensed matter system. And the famous Anderson-Higgs maxim is a way to give the fermion mass. So in the Lagrangian, you will have this Yukawa coupling. Maybe I can use the cursor, that would be best. You have the Yukawa coupling. And some boson field coupled to the fermion bilinear terms. When the boson condense, it will give the mass to your fermions. But such boson, such condensation of boson will spontaneously break the symmetry, either the gauge symmetry or the global symmetry. So in condensed matter system, if you have the spontaneous break the spin SO3 symmetry, you will get the anti-ferromagnetic, and usually the gap is about, if your transition temperature is 300 Kelvin, then it's about 30 milliEV. And for superconductivity, all the charge density wave, they mostly appear in lower temperature. But is there a way to symmetrically generate the mass without breaking the symmetry?
The gauge symmetry is not the actual symmetry.
It's a redundance. So what I mean by spontaneous symmetry breaking is really Higgs gauge field. Yes. Yeah. So it's actually different from anti-ferromagnetic is different from the superconducting. because anti-ferromagnetic is a global symmetry SO3. But for the superconductivity, you have the gauge U1 and Higgs down to Z2. So we are thinking about this new way to generate mass without breaking symmetry. And here are several motivations to study this new mechanism. One is we will have some new correlated phase and phase transitions, and it may also apply to the pseudogap phase. For high energy people, it may be interesting in simulate the standard model on the lattice. And let me elaborate more. So we may conjecture this. Phase diagram. We have the gapless fermion, and we also have the SMG insulator, which is a symmetric gap phase. So there, if we assume the transition is continuous, then it's a continuous transition between two symmetric phases, which is certainly beyond the Landau paradigm, because the Landau paradigm describes the transition become from the one symmetry breaking phase to the symmetric phase. So this may remind you about many interesting examples of the quantum phase transitions beyond Landau paradigm. People study a lot about this deconfined quantum critical point. It's a transition between two spontaneous symmetry breaking phase. And for this SMG transition, it's also different from the Landau paradigm because it's a transition between two symmetric phase. Maybe we can, and also there are some model about this SMG transition involves the deconfined gauge field at the critical point.
So do you allow the gap of this to have topological order?
At this point, we do not allow to have the do not want the featureless multi-insulator to have a topological order.
Why?
Because so we want anomaly free and you can certainly consider the scenario we have a topological order.
Yeah, in that video, I think they are topological orders.
Yeah, so the like this dashed Fermi surface.
And also, panel A has topological order.
Okay. Yeah, we are thinking about like you can stack maybe two topological order together to get a unique ground state, and get a similar SMG transition. So you can trivialize the anomaly and to get an anomaly-free gap phase.
Like going across another transition?
So you have one copy of the, you have one layer which is Fermi liquid to the topological order. And the second layer also the Fermi surface, Fermi liquid to topological order. But these two topological order, you can condense the anion cross the topological order to get a symmetric gap phase. With unique ground state.
That requires another transition.
Sorry?
That requires another transition.
Yeah, we can discuss this more if we can find maybe a direct transition through this phases, right? So maybe a more comprehensive comparison between the DQCP and SMG is that in DQCP transition, we have this mixed anomaly at the critical point, but the SMG transition, we are requiring the anomaly-free condition. However, both of them have the emergent gauge field at the critical point, but for DQCP, mostly studied this U1 gauge theory with the matter field, although you can consider the SU2 gauge theory, and that would be more complicated. For SMG transition, there's no much study on this, but they will also involve the non-abelian gauge field and matter fields. So people study many duality web and self-duality on the DQCP transition. So it would be very interesting to study also the duality for the SMG critical point. More on the dynamical side, then it's a question about how can you get the continuous transition between the how would you get the continuous transition, and that may involve further study of the based on the quantum Monte Carlo or DMRG study for this for the models. And finally, there are very interesting monopole in the DQCP theory carries a symmetry charge of another SSB phase. Then it would be interesting to study this SMG transition if the monopole is interesting. Whether, yeah.
Yeah, why it is called the deconfinement from criticality and the terminology?
Oh, because at the critical point, you have the deconfined gauge field.
But off critical.
It's a confined, or Higgs.
How do you know at critical point you have deconfined
field? Okay. That's a good question. Okay, for current model, it's not deconfined. If you have a two fermion flavor, most numerical study, this U1 gauge field will also confine.
Let's say you have a grid gauge series that flow to a CFT.
Yes.
How do you know the gauge field is confined or deconfined?
Oh, you can study like the you can study the Wilson loop. Whether.
Have people study that?
Okay, so with matter field, you cannot have the closed Wilson line. You will end up with the matter field. How do we tell the gauge field is confined or not? We calculate the beta function, and
let's go to a simple case. Right, we know that let's say you have this boson vortex duality, and mm-hmm. still description you have gauge field.
Yes. I think if you have a like freely fluctuating gauge field, then that's deconfined. How do you tell that?
Yeah. What does that mean?
Okay, it's that's like the gauge field, the propagator, it's 1 over Q.
That's a large instant.
Large instant, that's right.
Go ahead.
Okay,
yeah. You should be careful about using the word deconfined gauge
field. I see, yeah. Okay, yes, actually from my point of view, this DQCP is really defined by the mixed anomaly between the global symmetries. Because you take a look at the phase diagram, it's from one SSB phase to another SSB phase, and the critical point is the gapless theory. So they satisfy this the consequence of the mixed Tohoff anomaly, and you will have the either SSB phase or gapless phase or topological order. But in this case, you don't have the you only have the SSB phase and the gapless phase.
Are you referring to the anomaly of the exact symmetry or emergent symmetry?
Emergent symmetry.
So do you think there cannot be the phenomena of deconfined quantum criticality in the sense it's a transition between different SSB phases if there's no mixed anomaly?
If there's no mixed anomaly between these two symmetry, I would not call it a DQCP.
Do you think in that case, what is possible to have a phenomena to have a continuous transition between two SSB phases?
I think maybe you go to large N, that could be possible. You have the continuous transition between two SSB phases. Because in that case, the matter field coupled to the U1 gauge field would not have a confined, like for ordinary DQCP, you have two fermion flavors, and the gauge fluctuation is, so maybe we can discuss later, but I think maybe you go to large flavor, then it should be possible to have a continuous transition.
DQCP is not really the topic of this talk, right?
So maybe we should. Yeah, right. I think people here are really expert in DQCP, so I want to draw some a comparison between these two theories. Exactly, but that's a good starting point. We have many discussions. And for yeah, exactly. And for this phase diagram, we have the pseudogap phase. This is a phase diagram for the cuprate. We have this Fermi arc, and some part of the Fermi surface is gapped. We cannot see it. So, but in this phase, we also do not break any symmetry. So this may also need a way to generate the mass without break symmetry. For high energy, people want to study this standard model on the lattice to simulate the physics. But if you put on the lattice, you will also always have the fermion doubling problem. And the chiral fermion will have the anti-chiral partners in the mirror sector. So you want to symmetrically gap out the anti-chiral, symmetrically gap out the mirror sector to simulate the phase that correspond to the standard model. Okay. Yeah. Let me give the very simple example in 0 plus 1 D about this SMG transition. So if you have a complex fermion on the 0 plus 1 D quantum dot with the particle symmetry, then this symmetry will forbid any fermion bilinears, even if you have several layers. So this A index is it's a layer index. You can have many copies of this quantum dot, but under this parity transformation, you will pick up a minus sign. So you cannot add bilinear term to your Hamiltonian. But if you allow the interaction term, then you can add this four fermion interaction, C1, C2, C3, C4 across the four layers. And this is symmetric, will gap out your system. So this is actually reminiscent of the interaction reducer classification of SPTs. This 0 plus 1D quantum dot adjusts the Majorana zero mode at the boundary of the 1 plus 1D Majorana chain. Here we consider this Z2 symmetry. And if you have if you are not allowed interactions, then any copy you cannot gap out the boundary mode. But if you are allowing this interaction, you can carefully design a specific four fermion interaction. It's not specific, but I mean, you need to carefully design the four fermion interaction such that gap out the boundary mode without breaks the Z2 symmetry. This is in this seminal paper by Fitgowski and Kitai. So the SMG, whether you cannot gap out, the age mode relates to the total anomaly of this global symmetry. And it's an obstruction to, they have two definitions. One is an obstruction to gauging the symmetry, or it's an obstruction to have a symmetric gap phase with a unique ground state. There's a caveat is that for non-invertible symmetry in maybe 1 plus 1D transitions, this definition will bifurcate, and the anomaly for non-invertible symmetry only forbids you have a symmetric gap phase with a unique ground state.
Then you could have a symmetry with anomaly, but it cannot gauge.
You can still gauge it.
Yeah.
You choose the algebraic object, and you can still gauge it. Yeah, but for ordinary global symmetry, you cannot. And the SMG we studied requires the vanishing of this Tolkhoff anomaly, and also other maybe gravitational anomaly, chiral anomaly, and to have this symmetric gap phase. So this is really, you can generalize the symmetry and to study different scenarios. For example, you can have a protecting symmetry like the ordinary group symmetry, then the anomaly-free condition given by the group cohomology or cobordism classification. Some examples, it's very interesting. It's this 3450 chiral fermion model. So here the anomaly basically relates to the quantum Hall physics. And non-invertible symmetry is also very interesting generalization. They have a different anomaly-free condition. This can also be generalized to subsystem symmetry or Hilbert symmetry, and the examples we currently haven't study yet, but it's really interesting to explore more. This is only the necessary condition. So if you want to really have this gap phase, then you need to have the interaction carefully designed to gap out the gapless degree of freedom. So in this talk, I will mainly focus on this loop group symmetry with the Fermi surface anomaly. And the example I will talk about is the Baillard square lattice. Let me maybe first reveal something about the Fermi liquid. If we have the generic Fermi surface, I will focus on like 2+1D, and then this Fermi surface is a circle. You can parametrize by the theta angle. So generic Fermi surface is stable against the interaction. If you don't have a nesting or pairing, then it's stable against the forward scattering interaction. So the Hamiltonian for the Fermi liquid, you can have the energy, you can have the fermion operator, density operator at each theta angle. And this Hamiltonian has an emergent loop U1 symmetry, which is acting on the fermion at different theta angle with a different phase. However, this phase should be parametrized by this theta angle. So you cannot arbitrarily like rotate the phase with a abrupt like change, but a continuous function and have this equivalent relation. So a better way to understand this emergent loop U1 symmetry is to look at the maybe Fourier series of the decomposition of this phi theta function. In the zeroth order, you have this phi naught, which is a constant, and this is basically the total U1 symmetry of your Fermi surface. And the first order would be you have a phase positive and negative in the x direction or along the y direction. Then that corresponds to the translation symmetry. For other higher order, then it's very interesting to explore more about the physical meaning. So I would like to maybe mention this anomaly matching between this macroscopic translation symmetry and charge U1 symmetry. They have this Lipschultz-Matthes anomaly, and one can view this loop group symmetry as an eminent symmetry from this charge U1 and translation symmetry.
Well, I think actually the symmetry is not eminent in the sense that they defined it. At least in higher, I mean, in one dimension it would be, but in 2D it's not, because you can write.
You can have.
It means you cannot write operators that would break the symmetry, but it would, I mean, liquid is obviously scattering operators that would break the symmetry.
I see. Scattering, but for we're not allowed to add the scattering between different Fermi surface, right?
Why?
You are only allowed to add the n theta and n theta prime density.
Become irrelevant.
Yeah.
I think that's Dominic's point.
I see.
It's an emergent symmetry.
Uh-huh.
Eminent had a particular meaning that they gave it in that paper, which say not just that there are operators, but they're irrelevant, but there are no operators you can write in the Lorentz theory that would break the symmetry.
I see. Exactly. Right.
Eminent symmetry mean the subgroup of the emergent symmetry that the exact symmetry is embedded into?
No. I think there's a, in 1+1D at least, you cannot embed Z, translation Z to a U1's group.
By group homomorphism, I can.
You cannot. One is non-compact, one is compact.
Well, it goes to a like dense subgroup of the U1.
Okay.
But I don't think that's the definition of eminent, though. The definition is that you cannot write an operator that commutes of the microscopic symmetries and that breaks the low energy symmetry.
Is it different from what I said?
I mean, I think it's different.
Right.
maybe we should talk about that later.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, that's right. The eminent symmetry, it's different from the emergent symmetry. You need the Michaels property symmetry to like forbid you can write these operators.
Yeah, I was talking about the subgroup of the emergent symmetry, where the exact symmetry is invited into by the group homomorphism.
Okay.
Yeah, I assume that subtle difference is probably not super important for your talk.
We can discuss this later. It's really interesting to have this understand these subtleties. Yeah, and for this loop U1 symmetry, it's you have the necessary condition for the SMG. You need to have the charge times the filling sum over all different Fermi surface equals to 0 mod 1. So this basically this formula can also be generalized to other flavor symmetry groups, and we will discuss this at the end of the talk. So maybe let me mention this exotic quantum phases. It's about the for you. You have this anomalous. You have the you have the LSM's anomaly. Then you must have in the low energy. You will have the symmetry breaking phase, like the AFM and the valence bond solid. You can have the topological order realized in this quantum spin liquid, or the gapless excitations like the DQCP. And the anomalous theory can be viewed as the boundary of the higher dimensional SPT. But if you have the but here we consider this anomaly free SMG insulator, then the we can have the unique symmetric ground state. So the particular model we are interested in this is this bilayer square lattice and with the interlayer spin-spin interaction. So this can possibly describe the superconductivity in this newly found material. So maybe So since we have the Fermi liquid phase and the SMG insulator phase, we may wonder what's the intermediate phase or what's a transition. So the possible scenarios are there could be a continuous transition like in this first scenario. It can also be you have a spontaneous symmetry breaking phase, then go across another transition to the SMG insulator. This is really dependent on the model details. And currently, we have this model that fits into the second scenario. We first have a Fermi liquid and go to a superconductivity phase or a exciton condensation phase. Then after after a transition, we'll become the SMG insulator.
So the symmetry breaking phase has gapped fermion or gapless?
They are gapped.
Okay, so it's just an ordinary.
Exactly.
When you say SMG, you mean you don't want to break the loop group symmetry at all?
It's not breaks the It not breaks the loop group symmetry. At least it not breaks the U1 and the translation symmetry.
We don't want to break the not breaking the U1 seems like a much stronger condition than that.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, that's a larger condition. It's a more constrained condition.
If you have an LU1 in your IR, isn't that more the same? Your theory has to be pretty gapless.
I think if our interaction is respect this LU1. I don't know how to describe this if you don't have a quasi particle. You have the LU1 because maybe thinking about the Fermi liquid, then you have the quasi particle along the Fermi surface. But if this quasi particle, I become like in the strongly coupling limit, you don't have this quasi particle. How do you define this loop U1 symmetry? Actually, we try to define this using the method in Meng Cheng and Sivert's paper, like using the twisted partition function to describe such anomaly. It's more like the Oshikawa's argument use, right? The symmetry flux and
for global U1 or loop
U1? Loop U1. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the anomaly of loop U1 can be defined locally. It's like a violation of the observation law locally. So you don't need any global functions to define it. But like the point is that the loop group is anomalous, right? And the anomaly is Z classified. So it doesn't matter if you take several copies, it's still anomalous. So then it seems like you cannot get a trivial insulator without breaking the.
But notice that although it's Z classified, you also have a failing fraction need to add in. So you can have two copies of.
That's if you only want to have translation symmetry, then the failing fraction is like the quote unquote anomaly. But like mm-hmm. if you preserve the whole loop U1, then you have to talk about the anomaly of the loop U1, and that's Z classified.
Yeah. But
this anomaly matching condition still looks like U1 cross translation, right? Because,
yes.
I don't see the information of the full LU1 in this relation anymore.
Okay, yeah, maybe we can discuss later. Maybe we can first focus on the translation symmetry and the U1 symmetry, and then say what's a symmetric gap phase is. Yeah.
So I just want to understand this phase diagram. So the green dot is?
A Fermi liquid.
Uh-huh, then, so do you mean in the bilayer model, there's a SSB phase?
Yes.
What is it?
It's either superconductivity or the accident condensation.
We have two choices.
Oh, sorry. That's for if you have half failing. If you are at half failing, this is the superconductivity order parameter is related by the accident condensation operator by a particle transformation. And then also at the half failing, you will have a O4 Wilson-Fischer transition.
So in this SSB phase, the system only is basically gapped except there's a ghost mode.
Yes. Yeah, it's a trivial, like an ordinary SSB phase. Yes. So that's why we can think this phase diagram could in principle describe the superconductivity in the new material.
But do you think this is a feature of the nested Fermi surface or what? If you have next year's neighbor copying, let me first confirm. In this phase diagram, do you mean some infinitesimal coupling J will drive the Fermi liquid into this space?
Yes.
I guess this is a consequence of the nested Fermi surface.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's particular at the half failing. Half failing, you have like a square Fermi surface, it's a nested.
With only nearest neighbor hopping.
Yeah, with only nearest hopping, right? That's actually could describe this material. We will see later, and the electronic structure matches with the model. So in like five months ago, there's this Nature article about this newfound nucleate superconductivity, nucleate superconductor, and so the professor Meng Wang first they synthesized this material and found that it's not superconducting in the ambient pressure. But he's also an expert in high pressure physics. So he puts this material into the chamber and adds the high pressure. So they found this superconducting phase very unexpectedly. And they further measure this resistance versus temperature curve with a different pressure and they found this transition temperature is about 70 Kelvin, and it can be decreased due to the pressure. They also have this diagrammatic response measurement. Yes. So maybe we can put this new material into the very large family of the superconductor across the past century. We first have the BCS superconductor, and due to the electrophonon interaction, and then maybe 30, 40 years ago, people found the cuprate and then ion-based superconductor. They're really interesting because one thing is because they are above this liquid nitrogen boiling temperature, and also they have very very interesting phase diagrams. This nuclear superconductivity only like above the this liquid nitrogen boiling temperature like this year. So it's a very new family of this high temperature superconductivity. All this copper ion and nickel, they are transition metal, they're similar transition metal. And people also find a family of this nickel superconductivity. Maybe here there's another dot, it's another compound. But these two compounds, I mean the lower one and the upper one, they're quite different due to the doping of the electron.
So the lower one is the so-called infinite layer one?
So-called what?
Infinite layer.
Infinite layer, yeah. I'm not sure actually. I'm sorry. But the lower one is more like the, I think more like a cuprate superconductivity.
Is the lower one discovered by Stanford? I guess 2019.
I see. Thank you for pointing out. Yeah, and this new, we can look at the phase diagram of this new material. So it has a superconducting dome, and then increase the temperature, you have the strange metal, and lower the pressure, it will undergo the structure transition, and the only nearby phase is a paramagnetic insulator phase.
So you don't have to dome it, just add pressure.
Yeah, add the pressure. Exactly. So it's very interesting to compare this new phase diagram with the cuprate and ion-based, because the cuprate and ion-based superconductivity emerges nearby with a nearby like spontaneous symmetry breaking phase. They have an AFM phase or a SDW phase. But here for the nucleates, there is no like obvious spontaneous symmetry breaking. That's a very interesting like a phenomenon in this material. And if we look closer to the lattice structure, you will find that this nickel oxygen layer is separated by the lanthanum, and it has a two-layer structure in this region, in this yellow region. So it's different from the cuprate or the ion-based, they only have one layer. And for this two-layer, you can further say it's a square lattice, and because of this doping, you have a 7.5 electrons per layer, and two layer you have 15 electrons, and most of them are occupied the lower band. The active electrons are only like there are two electrons in the dd square band and one electron in the dx square minus y square band. And the dd square has this interlayer hopping. It will induce, if you have a Haber interaction, it will induce the super exchange. Then it's correspond to a spin-spin interaction. But for the dx square minus y square, it's mostly intraplanar. So this is actually fits into our model, because this dz square electrons indeed have this interlayer hopping, but with a very small interlayer interaction, but a very small intralayer hopping. Then it's actually in this strong coupling limit and with half failing. Right. Are there questions?
Do they have an estimate of how big Harbor U is from?
I think some literature say it's about like 2.53
times T or
EV, but T is much T is about 0.6, something like that, and then the induced interaction is about maybe 1 or 2 EV, but the intralayer hopping is very small. Then it's you may think this J goes to infinity, and because this is it's half field and also bilayer structure with this particular S dot S interaction, in the strongly coupling limit, you will drive to a unique symmetric ground state with a spin singulate across these two layers.
You say interlayer hopping is very small.
Yeah, intralayer hopping is very small.
That means J is small.
Right? No. Sorry. J is big because that's T squared over U, and intralayer hopping is not that small. It's 0.6
UV. Oh, yeah. Sorry. You meant
Am I misspelled?
Hopping between the different layers?
Uh-huh.
Are they small or not?
Hopping between different layers, they are big.
Oh, they're big.
Yeah, because it's dz square orbital and the pz orbital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that hopping is big.
I see. And the hopping within the same layer is big.
Yeah, it's big. That's right. Yeah.
How big is J?
How big? Our estimate is about 2 eV.
And you said how about U is?
How about 2.2 or 3? Less than, I think 2.5 maybe.
That's within one site. Within one layer.
Yeah, within one layer.
But it's ignored here.
Sorry?
It's ignored here.
Oh, that's another effect we should add in. But let's maybe first focus on this term. Yeah. Exactly. I will discuss what's the U effect. So we can calculate the phase diagram based on either weak coupling analysis or strong coupling analysis. And the phase diagram looks like this. All this blue region are the superconductivity, and some prediction for the transition temperature. And there is at half failing, you will have this featureless MOS insulator phase. So, yeah. How much time do I have?
15 minutes.
Okay. Cool. Good. So at BCS, so if you have lower doping, means that you may consider the superconductivity comes from the dx squared minus y squared electrons, and the half failing correspond to the dz squared electrons. There are still a debate between which electron, which orbit really contributes the superconductivity, but for like a general analysis, we calculate the general failing and find this phase diagram.
Just want to make sure the horizontal axis is J over T?
Yes, it's J over T. Sorry, it's not J prime over T. It's J over T, yes. So at the BC side, if you increase the J, then that will decrease your transition temperature. BCS side, increase J will increase the transition temperature. So some points may be very interesting. This lightning point corresponds to the dx squared minus y squared electrons. However, it may not actually align with the experiment because in experiment, increase the pressure will decrease the transition temperature. But here, if you increase the pressure, that will increase the transition temperature. I'm sorry for the confusing word. But the other two points are really more maybe aligned with the experiment, but they are described by this. They are more favor this dz squared electron contribute to the superconductivity.
Experimentally, don't they have a fixed spin fraction?
For the, okay, yeah, there is a, so for dx squared minus y squared, it's a fixed, it's a quarter filling, one electron in four orbits. But for dz squared, it's two electrons in this four orbits.
Oh, so the two layers have different filling fractions?
No. In total, you consider like two layer and two spin up and down.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's also a mechanism that as the pressure will maybe induce the charge transfer from the dx squared minus y squared electron to the dz squared electron. So the filling may not be fixed by this number. And that's why maybe this dz squared can either be at exactly half filling or below the half filling. And if you are at the exactly half filling, then if you further like increase the G, you will go across the transition to a featureless multi-insulator. This is some more different angle of this phase diagram. And in the BC side, you have a preformed Coulomb pairs, and then the transition is described by this disorder, this phase. I would like to talk more about something about some features that can be really measured by the experiment. So here is a comparison between the so-called cluster perturbation theory and the quantum Monte Carlo study of the Green's function. This system is very unique because you have a unique ground state in the strongly coupling limit. Then you can start with that unique ground state and add perturbation back to get this spectral weight or Green's function. This diagram just want to show that they have a good comparison between a simple method and the quantum Monte Carlo simulation. Maybe we can skip this part. It's basically you first diagonalize your Hamiltonian in this very small cluster and add the perturbation back as the RPA type of correction to your Green's function, then get the whole Green's function in the momentum space. We apply this method to this realistic setup with some measurements from RPAS about these materials in the normal state. And you can see these features like fits very well with the RPAS experiment. There's a very unique feature about this SMG phase is that if you reconstruct the Green's function from your spectral weight, and you will find the real part of the Green's function, or maybe correspond to the Green's function zeros, have this similar feature as the poles in the Fermi liquid set. So maybe one way to understand this is that you, from a Fermi liquid phase, and go to a SSB phase, like you have this Green's function for the spontaneous symmetry breaking. And then go to the SMG phase, what's happening is that you are averaging over the SSB order. Then you will have this dispersion from the denominator to the numerator. And after you averaging all this SSB order.
What's the complete statement of this Green's function zero?
Complete statement of this Green's function zero. We do not have a very like non-perturbative way to argue this. So there are many aspects. One aspect is the structure of this Green's function. Maybe you can explain, like we can explain how this Green's function look like this through some perturbation loop calculation. You can explain why you have this structure. Basically, you have two interaction bands separated by this scale of J of interaction, and then the numerator is maybe a correction to your fermion self energy. Contribute to the gives you the numerator.
Can I ask about, let's say, consider a trivial case, that let's just say consider a boring semiconductor. I have a valence band, and then let's completely fill the conduction band that's completely empty. What would the green function look like there? Is that?
Maybe you have a...
Yeah, how is this different from that? Maybe that's my question.
I mean, you will only have the denominator, like 1 over omega minus your epsilon k. The epsilon k contains your energy gap.
Right.
Right. And then you will not have the like the numerator. If you calculate the imaginary parts, there is no feature. Only, OK, so maybe you can see this plot. So instead of this zero, this very very interesting feature this very interesting feature only near the omega equals zero, but there is also other zeros around the interaction bands. So that's a Euro's insulator will have such zero near the interaction bands, or near the valence bands and conduction bands. But here we have another zero around the omega equals zero. That's the main difference.
So the statement is that within this frictionless multi-insulator phase, the electronic Green's function will have zero at precisely the same momentum as the, as what?
As the Fermi liquid.
At which Fermi liquid?
As if you turn off the interaction. If you start with a half-filling Fermi liquid, and you turn on the interaction, maybe let's just go to this diagram. So, if you have a half-filling and two-layer without interaction, you will have this Fermi surface. That's from your pose of the Green's function. And when you turn on the interaction, this surface is defined by the Green's function zeros, not poles.
I'm trying to make this statement sharp. So is the following correct? Suppose I consider a model Hamiltonian that might be interacting, and this Hamiltonian is in the frictionless multi-insulator phase. Now is the statement correct that if I look at the electronic Green's function, then there must be some zeros of Green's function at momenta where they are also zeros if I completely switch off the interaction. Is this the statement?
There's two questions that one can ask. Firstly, you can ask, is the zero exactly at the same point as
no,
that can't be true, right? Because like, if you go far away from the Fermi liquid, it can't remember where exactly the Fermi surface was, right?
Yeah, this only for half filling, it's exactly this position. But if you
You could imagine that, I'm saying that maybe the volume stays the same. I'm not sure about that either, but if the volume changes the same, the position could change, right?
Could deform. That's for generic filling.
So why is filling 1/2? The brilliant zone doesn't have to be exactly this shape that you've drawn, right? It could be anything consistent with the half filling.
Okay, so if we, for half filling, we can impose the particle symmetry. And that will pin your shape.
Does it really pin it uniquely?
We can discuss this later. It's some detailed analysis. But in general, they will not constrain the shape of the Fermi surface.
Then the second question is it true that the volume enclosed by the zeros has to be equal to the filling? I don't believe that there is any such theorem, right?
If you don't have a fractionalization or symmetry breaking, then the Luttinger theorem should be satisfied.
There is no Luttinger theorem for
this is not a Fermi liquid.
This is not a Fermi liquid, but the counting of this area is defined by Green's function, maybe positive larger than zero, and that could either
proof of Luttinger theorem.
Yes.
You're exactly. That's highly non-productive.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. The statement here is for half filling, we don't violate the Luttinger theorem in the SMG insulator. Mm-hmm. Right.
So for half filling, you further impose particle symmetry.
I think maybe there should be a like a emergent particle symmetry, like not in. Right. So quantum Monte Carlo can also have a you have a small interaction. Then people study this transition between the Fermi liquid to the SMG insulator, and found this O4 Wilson Fischer point. I think it would be interesting to have a more general systematic RG analysis on different Fermi surface and interaction. So maybe we. It's a part about some generalization to the loop U1. We can consider other symmetry group with other different flavor symmetries, and also this anomaly index is a combination between the non-perturbative part and the filling fraction. There's other like classification for this Fermi surface anomaly. If you have a co-dimension P Fermi surface anomaly, then this is classified by a p-dimensional SPT. For example, the well points in the 3+1D is classified by the z cross z correspond to the quantum Hall or the thermal Hall connectance. I think that's a summary. So I described this Fermi surface symmetry mass generation and some condition with a very interesting application to a realistic system. This newly found nuclear superconductivity. And there are many features that can be further detected by the experiment, such as strong band renormalization and Green's function zero for the dz square orbit. Other future directions could be the understand more about the SMG transition using the duality and RG analysis. And this SMG can also be generalized to the generalized symmetry setup involving maybe the self-duality, then you have the non-invertible symmetry, and maybe Hell-form symmetry and other symmetries. And the application to other realistic system will be very interesting. With this, thank you for your attention and questions. Yes.
I wanted to clarify whether you did say that there is an LU1 symmetry that's remaining in this insulator after symmetric mass generation.
In the symmetric mass generation, there is still this U1 symmetry in the insulating phase.
No, I was asking about the LU1 symmetry.
LU1, okay. I'm sure about there is still translation symmetry and the U1 symmetry. I should look into more about the higher order like of the loop group. Because it's a strongly coupling limit, I think there need a way to describe this loop U1 in the strongly coupling limit.
You just need to write a Hamiltonian that doesn't scatter between different points on the surface. You can do that even in a strongly coupled system. The insulator of the low energy theory is just trivial, right? So like, there's no emergent symmetries or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see how you could have the what you want.
Are you more or less trying to some way include the Green function zeros as part of your IR theory?
Actually.
How exactly do you do that?
We think this Green's function zero should be a feature of this. I'm not sure whether it's a trivial insulator, but in the strongly coupling limits, this insulator has this Green's function zero. And you could couple this to a background, maybe grab background gauge field.
Is that this feature is actually universal for this frame?
Whether this is universal for this phase, I think currently, first we have many examples with different types of interaction. Charge 4e interaction, you could also have this Green's function 0. And this spin-spin interaction, you'll have this Green's function 0. That's one evidence. And also for gapless case, based on the gapless case, there's more evidence for this Green's function zero. Okay, yeah, so, right, so you start with k slash plus m. This Green's function describes the Dirac fermion with a mass. And for this SMG phase, it's something like k squared plus m squared, and numerator is k slash. So for relativistic case, there's also this phenomenon. It's zero here. Right. And the way to maybe detect this, to see some real, like additional test is you can couple this to the background gauge field, like couple to photon, and that will change the beta function for the gauge field.
But like in the limit where j goes to infinity, isn't the ground state of the automaton just a product state?
It's a product state, but it's different from the band insulator.
Yeah, but like product state clearly has no like low energy modes or anything. It's like a gap.
Yes, it's gap.
But yeah, I don't see how the function zeros could be doing anything. It's a gap system.
It doesn't. I don't think so. First of all, the Green's function zero doesn't mean anything about the. I'm not sure I understand the question, but.
For example, you mentioned it changes the beta function when you couple the dynamic gauge.
Uh-huh.
Literally, that t equals to zero, equivalent j goes to infinity limit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even couple to the photon. So.
That's right. So that's a recent paper calculates the relativistic case. It calculates the in the strongly coupling limit, they just substitute the Green's function to the SMG Green's function and then calculate the beta function. And also I think this is not a trivial state. Maybe for example the it's another generation. If you consider non-invertible symmetry, the SMG phase cannot be a product state, actually. It's a SPT state. This is a product state, exactly. Right. This is a product state. But
So is there any proof or theorem like saying this volume of Green function zero has to stay invariant under adiabatic deformation? Anything of that? Any statement of that for you?
Yes. So we basically follow the Oshikawa's statement and generalize to this other group, other flavor symmetry.
The Green's function zeros?
Oh, no, not Green's.
Yeah, I'm asking about Green's function.
Oh, Green's function zeros. If we have something similar to the Oshikawa's statement, we have the lower weak coupling and strongly this theorem applies for both the weak coupling and the strong coupling. Then
you have a Fermi liquid or a loop-free one.
But the failing can also be calculated due to the zeros, the volume of the zeros, right? Your Green's function can be in some region greater than zero and some region less than zero. But this does not need to be a pole. It can be either infinity or zero.
Like, Oshikawa doesn't seem like it has anything to do with Green's function, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, Green's function is more like perturbative. Okay, so I'm not sure the general argument for whether the Green's function zero would stay the same.
Well, maybe let me just make sure I understand the precise statement made here. Are you saying that starting from the product state limit, this J goes infinity limit, and then perturbatively, you do provision theory on top of that,
mm-hmm.
then as long as provision theory converges or something,
mm-hmm.
then this volume stays identically?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. So this Green's function zero feature needs you have the some hopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you tried away from half-filling?
Away from half-filling, we didn't like some numerics who say this, but it's not well justified because the strongly coupling limit is not.
We don't have the insulator.
You don't have the insulator. You have multiple ground state.
Yeah.
But for exactly for half filling, we can use this method to tell you the structure.
That is here. It doesn't depend on the relative strength between T and T.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Speaker Kane.
Thank you.